This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Breakfast Grill and I am Tan Chen Lee. In a world where we are reliant on our computers, laptops and gadgets to perform a myriad of tasks online, how safe are we? To find out, we speak to one well-known player in the area of endpoint cybersecurity, CrowdStrike. Listed on the NASDAQ with a market capitalization of $51 billion, this company offers cloud-based security breach protection products and services globally. In times when we're seeing the rising frequency of cyberware attacks and online scams, how is CrowdStrike capitalizing on this phenomenon and achieving growth? CrowdStrike's Asia Managing Director, Jagdish Mahapatra, tells us. Good morning, Jagdish. Thank you for joining me today.
Good morning to you. Good to be here.
Now, global spending on cloud security is expected to double from $6 billion in 2020 to $12 billion in 2023. Which geographical region is seeing the greatest growth and why is that?
Yeah, well, let's talk about the region close to us, which is Asia Pacific, and closer to us, even Asia. So, as you know, for the last 2 years, the life we've been living in has challenged all the business models as well, right? People have been working from home, and the businesses had to really realter their value chain, and a lot of that has obviously gone on the digital side. Obviously, then it has opened up new areas by which the organizations have been vulnerable with respect to people being right on the front. I call them as the first line of attack or the first line of defense. And then the businesses moving on to digital on the fly. Can you imagine? I've spoken to so many CIOs around in the last 2 years, and some of them have achieved digitalization in 3 months that they might not have done in the last 3 years. So obviously there were processes which they had to really hoop through, jump through, and obviously that opened up new kinds of challenges. The bad news is all the adversaries, they've been very, very active around in looking at these vulnerabilities around in the transition time, have definitely made sure that they have amped up their attack types, whether it is supply chain or ransomware. And we'll talk a lot about that in the last 2 years. So fundamentally, that's been the premise, and that's not going to go away. We've seen lots of growth in the region, in Asia, in APJ, in many different ways with respect to number of customers who have come to us. I can give you a little data point which will kind of really give you a feel of how it has been. Last quarter, we just finished our fiscal about 2 months back. And if I were to tell you about some of our growth numbers closer home, end of Q4 last fiscal, which was Jan end for us, Jan 23 for us, our number of customers in Singapore grew by almost 92% year over year. I do not have specific Malaysia inputs, but Malaysia has been one of our growth markets for some time. So we continue to be extremely bullish as well as very committed to the market. But if you look at just closer to the number in Australia, we grew it by almost 43%. India, where I'm right now present as on my travel, 108% growth last quarter. And then we saw Japan, another growth of 71%.
So in our last interview, your Asian strategy seemed to focus on South Asia and the ASEAN region. So it seems like this is still the case, right?
That's right. So it's India for my region. It's India, South Asia, as we call it, including the neighboring countries of India, like Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, Nepal. Southeast Asia, closer to where we are. The countries, different levels of maturity, but the top country is obviously a big market for us. And then also I have in the North Asia definition, I have Taiwan is a market for us, Hong Kong, and then South Korea is starting to crank up as well.
And what about China? And I don't seem to see China in the list.
Yeah, so we don't formally engage in business in China and a few other countries. So yeah, we don't have physical presence in China at all. We do have a lot of our multinational customers, like the banks and others, who've got presence in China, but we don't formally engage as an entity in China.
Why is that?
We took this call right at the beginning because, one of our inception has been around on providing the lens of threat intelligence. Now, if you go back in, security about 10 years back, and I kind of really spoke about that last time as well, we always look at a security problem as a malware problem. Quite frankly, it's an adversary problem because is behind any kind of attack you get into your in your setup, there is an entity, there is a human group of human beings who are working on it. So we've been tracking these adversaries, as we call them. We track almost 170 distinct adversaries around the world. We do see a lot of adversarial activities from Chinese-based actors. We call them pandas. And since we track them pretty closely, it only made sense for us to really make sure that we provide that threat intelligence back to our customer to advantage. So we made a choice not to enter China market.
I hope the extraordinary growth also continues in Malaysia. How important is the Malaysian market to your overall strategy in Asia? And what are the targeted sectors or industry in the market?
Malaysia is important, very important market for us. We have a legal entity there. We've got employees there. We've got partners there with the capability. The sectors, obviously, we work very closely, has to be, you know, in not in terms of priority, but in terms of how important they are to national infrastructure. It's telecom, banking, government in different parts. And then, of course, we've seen significant adoption around on mid-size organizations also, because we've expanded our employee footprint as well as partner footprint there.
In terms of the growth opportunity in the market, in the Malaysian market, do you see more growth opportunity with the large corporations, or is it with the small, medium enterprise, or is it with the government institutions?
Yeah, I mean, let's just look at the reality today. As you are seeing all kinds of attacks, there's almost a headline literally every day, right? So, and you can see there that if the core of any country is governance, telecom, and banking. If you really have to paralyze a country, these are the three parts that adversaries look at, not necessarily with the intention of extorting money, but sometimes just to create disruption, right? So, we think moving forward, we will see the telecom sector getting even more cautious, more careful, and more forward-looking in terms of security posture, because as it starts to open up, I think the government transformation, governance transformation around on how you deliver services. And I know that Malaysia government has done a few things around, and it starts to open up now. I feel like that's one sector is going to look pretty exciting for us. And all the government banks, the public sector banks, the ones I feel like they're, again, ready for the next level of security upgradation. So I think these will be, for us, will continue to be our growth sectors. But small and medium businesses, the corporate segment, as we call it internally, we have seen them adopting much more agility than some traditional organizations. So I feel like as they start to compete with the global market, you know, let's look at it this way. Some of them could be registered with, they could be launching their digital assets using Shopify, or they could have a position in the AWS marketplace. They're all digital in terms of the business they're in. I don't think there is a business today which is not digital. I feel they're thinking about our security much more, looking at what kind of adversaries they might invite around the world.
How has CrowdStrike navigated the pandemic? Do you see more growth in the last 2 years since the last time we spoke?
There is a bit around on the CrowdStrike journey that should be told here. From the day one, we conceptualized why we needed a platform like CrowdStrike, we call it Falcon. There was a reason for it. I mean, there were things that were missing in the security industry, which obviously was making us susceptible to all the attacks. And I'll walk you through that. But from the day one, we conceptualized a security company, which is cloud native. We are the industry's first cloud native security company. There's a reason for that. And from day one, we always had a culture of people who could work remotely from anywhere. So quite frankly, when the COVID thing came into, it hit us, we literally didn't have any disruptions because we were used to working from any location, whether it's office or from home. So kind of really for us, it was business as usual. What obviously we started to see was that many of our prospects, many of our customers weren't. And that obviously they needed a lot of help around that. We got a services organization where we offer compromise assessment and we look at vulnerability checks and sometimes respond to their incidents that happen. We really guided a lot of organizations through incident response and compromise assessment and posture management, which really helped them really be sure that when they're opening up for work from home to all employees, your traditional security elements are out. There is no firewall protecting you. There could be a VPN, but some of the fundamental tenets on which you would build your digital fortress services were not working. We felt like we were always like that, so we didn't feel it. Yes, did we see a lot of growth during the last 2 years? Absolutely we did.
You are listening to The Breakfast Grill, and with me this morning is Jagdish Mahapatra, Asia Managing Director of CrowdStrike. Up next, we discuss data sensitivity and competition. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, welcome back to The Breakfast Grill. We are speaking to Jagdish Mahapatra, Asia Managing Director of CrowdStrike this morning. Before the break, we were discussing how CrowdStrike navigated the pandemic and also on their business strategies in Asia. Now, we know that you also have government entities as customers, but CrowdStrike is a US-based cybersecurity company. Can this be a politically sensitive issue with a US company tasked with protecting sensitive data of non-US government entities?
Well, you know, we've always had the industry leaders in security coming in from US, and so that's never been a reason or that's never been, I've never seen that politicized. We definitely don't operate in a few markets, as I mentioned before as well. We don't do business in China, Russia, North Korea, Iran, but the rest of the markets we've seen, when we go in as a listed company with our own values around on how we operate, and we've got customers around, we are present in 170 countries. We've never seen a geopolitical issue being a decision, you know, being part of the decision making. I think what you started to see is governments and the large organizations, medium sized organizations, are starting to see security as a real threat, because the mental models that in which we operated before has changed a lot, particularly in the last 2 years. So we have not seen that as a friction anywhere.
Based on the data that you have collected, where do the majority of cyber attacks emanate from?
Well, we obviously have seen, attacks across all kinds of adversaries. Well, the top of it would be all the cyber criminals, right? And we call them as spiders. And you can see they're financially motivated e-crime operators. That continues to dominate, right? Any kind of intrusion attempts that have been made. But we also see a lot of fair amount of nation state actors, okay, from different countries. I mentioned a few, like we saw in 2021, a lot of Chinese actors involved in, making sure that they, I call it as weaponization of vulnerabilities. You can literally use a business model of using more and more vulnerabilities and weaponize that to really extract financial incentive or information. We saw Russian-based adversaries targeting the IT to cloud service providers. Again, as you know, as we move to cloud, that's becoming another blind spot. And we've seen players, adversaries like Cozy Bear and Fancy Bear operating there. We've seen North Korean actors, not just nation state, but even e-criminals focusing around on cryptocurrency related entities, because that's been so lucrative that if you attack that segment, your economic benefit or monetary benefit really gets lift up. And then, of course, all the e-crime actors around have always been extremely active, particularly in the ransomware operations. So, yeah, this is pretty much there. And just to give you one more data point of ransomware, we saw almost 2,700 ransomware attacks last year, up from 1,474. So literally doubled, 100%, right? And these are all big game hunting. These are not spray and pray kind of stuff that I mentioned before.
What about in Malaysia's context? Where do the most cyber attacks come from?
I don't have really data on Malaysia right now, but I can tell you from my interactions with our customers and prospects, we saw a fair amount of ransomware and supply chain based attacks on the lines, as I said, almost on the percentages I shared for whole APJ. And we've seen similar to attack patterns in Malaysia as well.
So this industry is relatively competitive with many legacy players who have a long history of existence, like McAfee, Cisco. While CrowdStrike started only 11 years ago, how do you compete with these players, especially in Asia, where cybersecurity adoption seems to be a little slower?
When we came in, we really changed a few things. First of all, we said, we're going to give you a single Lightfoot agent. Our agent is still the lightest in the industry. That allows you to deploy even without rebooting the machine. Can you imagine from operationally what it means to CISOs? You can speak to some of the security professionals. They'll tell you deploying an agent without rebooting the machine is godsend. That's the first part.
Yes, okay? but because it's been 11 years, there's a lot of players who's also having a similar cloud-based, lightweight program. But how do you differentiate yourself from these players even?
That's right. So that's what I was trying to tell you. So when we got in here, we broke all those rules, right? Whether it was cloud native, in terms of how business is modular, real-time visibility, move away from signature-based detection to more behavior-based detection, indicators of attack, all these things are kind of really now table stakes, which means the first thing that should give you comfort is what we've been saying for last so many years. Now everybody feels that is the way forward. Now, what are we saying moving forward? I think moving forward, our focus will be how do we get better from the platform that we already have existing right now. We obviously have a lot of modularity in our platform. We'll continue to deliver more and more value to our customers using our unified single lightweight agent. But we just don't try it and do it alone. We've got an ecosystem of our partners where we can enable their threat detection through using our unified agent. We take a lot of pride in that because that makes our CISOs and CIOs to get a better return of their investment. While I know that there is a fair amount of competitive intensity in the market, I still think in terms of our thought process, we continue to lead with more ideas and more execution around on how our security professional customers and prospects can get a better value.
What about pricing strategies? Do you compete on pricing?
You know, this is my personal view, by the way. When you compete on pricing on security, I think security always takes a compromise. Always, okay? So for us, it's about the value. So we engage with a concept called as business value assessment. Every time we meet a prospect, my team would engage with our partners on the exercise called as business value assessment, where what we fundamentally do there is capture all the key economic drivers of making a decision for security. Because understand that the decision is by the CISO or the CIO, but the check will be cut by probably the CEO or the CFO. And they have a different template of looking at that investment. So we actually help them capture that upfront, not just technology, but the economic drivers. But the other difference we make here is every 3 months, we go back and do something called as value realization. Most of the time, I've been on many of these calls every quarter, we go down and say, hey, we told you that this is the economic value we'll give you. This is the ROI, these are the TCO, this is the payout period, and these are the different buckets where you'll save money. Have we actually done that? And we do that, depending on customers' availability, 2 to 3 times a year. And that's the real value. And that actually shifts the conversation, makes it easier for the CISOs and CIOs to really look at value versus price. I think that's the conversation that we've led and made a little bit of change around on how people should look at security.
So it was reported in the last quarter that the retention rate was 124%. So what incentives or programs have you been implementing in order to drive retention rates up?
What it means by 124% is if a customer spends $100 with us when they sign on for the first year, as you know, we don't sign multi-year contracts. We have annual contract values, right? And our sales guys and everybody, our entire technical team, everybody is gold on that. What it means is you can't just come and sell a 5-year contract to a customer and disappear. That's what used to happen in the industry. And the process I told you about, business value assessment and realization, are those touch points where we go back and say, okay, this is the economic value you've got, but if you add these modules and these new products that have come in, you can get even further saving. This is where we really prime them up. But so when we're ready, yeah.
Yeah, but business owners are price sensitive in a way, especially during the pandemic where revenue generation is also a concern. So they'll be more cautious with costs, right? So how do you convince these people to create the product stickiness?
Yeah, I mean, see, well, the pricing is always a local market decision. We take that based on what the market needs. We're obviously extremely competitive. We really want to make sure that the customers see value there. But I think depending on where the customers are on their journey, we always say, you know, we got almost so many more modules to sell, 20 plus modules that we can really sell right away. But we don't start with that. We first start by saying, can we solve your top 2 problems or 3 problems right now? So buy as much as you want, because you can always enable that. Unlike the hardware software world, you don't have to do anything here. here dramatic. So we go through the journey. We first solve their first top two, three problems, then go back and saying, okay, let's look at now, based on your maturity and now business readiness, do you think like there are other areas we can bring in value? We do that. So that allows them to really pan out their investment based on their appetite and also their business risk definition.
I know that CrowdStrike uses AI and machine learning to detect, recognize, and neutralize both known and unknown threats in real time. But cyber criminals could also utilize the same technology against your platform. So how do you stay ahead of the game?
Yeah, as we all know, technology doesn't have a moral compass, right? You know, it can be used by the good and bad guys always, and that's not going to change. And that's all the more reason why we've always been saying to use more complex technologies. But just know this, right? We use real-time visibility using AI and machine learning, where we can create some actionable data, identify the shifts in the adversarial tactics, and we can map their threat graphs in using our threat graphs, right? So we can automatically prevent threats in real time or provide better visibility and insight to everything that's happening on endpoint. But we also believe that, as you know, behind every attack there is a human being. We always believe that you still need those experts, where if some detect, you know, if misses some kind of a machine learning detection, the humans can take charge. We got something called as a overwatch service, where we really use our experts around the globe to do 24/7 threat hunting. So sophisticated attack require a mix of automation and human expertise in the form of threat hunting service. So Overwatch proactively searches for these threats on our customers' behalf. An elite team of threat hunters, they work 24/7. Just think of like it's an outsourced security operations center with CrowdStrike, and with an additional layer of protection to catch when other solutions might miss.
On that note, thank you for your time. Today on The Breakfast Grill was Jagdish Mahapatra, Asia Managing Director of CrowdStrike. I am Tan Shen Lee, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.